Richard Wagner. It was in the merry month of May in the year 1813 that the great musician Richard Wagner was born. The room in which he first made his voice heard was on the second floor of the Red and White Lion in the old town of Leipzig, where there was plenty of other noises in the busy street outside to drown the sound of his feeble wailing. 2 days later, he was carried to St. Thomas Church, where he received the name of Wilhelm Richard. Richard's father was a clerk in the police service at Leipzig, but he was a student, too, and loved all kinds of literature and poetry, and was especially fond of the theater. Many of his friends were actors, and when, soon after Richard's birth, he died and left a widow and 7 children, it was one of these actor friends, a man named Ludwig Geyer, who took charge of the family, married the widow, and became a kind and loving stepfather to the children. From the very first, it was baby Richard who was his stepfather's favorite, and he made up his mind that the child should have the best possible education and turn out a credit to the family. He was anxious that all the children should do well, but his hopes were set on Richard. It was no easy matter to provide for a family of 7 children, so Ludwig Geyer was thankful when he was given a post in the theater at Dresden and could comfortably settle there with his large family. Richard was only 2 years old when he left Leipzig, so the very first thing he could remember was the Dresden theater and his kind stepfather carrying him about the stage. The theater was like a mysterious magic world to him, whether he saw it from the stage box or whether he wandered amongst the actors and peeped half fearfully into the wardrobe, where wigs and false noses and curious costumes were lurking ready to spring out at him. Sometimes, too, he took part in the performances, and that made him feel very important indeed. There was one special occasion when a performance was given for the King of Saxony, and to Richard's great joy, he was allowed to act the part of an angel. He was sewn up in tights, and wings were fastened to his shoulders, and although he had nothing to do but to pose gracefully, he gave his whole mind seriously to the task. He was not at all surprised, therefore, when the performance was over, he was told that the king had sent him a big iced cake as a token of his approval. He felt he had quite deserved it. Sometimes there were a few words to be spoken in the little parts which Richard took, and that provided a good excuse for leaving his lessons unlearned. "I had a most important part to learn," he would say solemnly to his teacher, while all the other little boys and girls listened enviously. However, by the time Richard was 6 years old, his stepfather thought it was time to begin lessons in earnest, and sent him to a clergyman's house, not far from Dresden, to be taught there with several other little boys. So the magic world of the theater was closed for Richard, but other things began at once to interest him. He enjoyed playing games, and books were discovered to possess all kinds of new joys. There was the exciting adventures of Robinson Crusoe, a biography of Mozart, besides the real accounts in the newspapers of the Greek War of Independence. That war fired all Richard's imagination, and he wanted to hear all about the Greeks, and he listened entranced to the old stories of Greek mythology. Scarcely a year had passed in the country parsonage when again a change came into Richard's life. A messenger arrived post-haste from Dresden to fetch Richard home, as his stepfather was dying and wanted to see him. The boy set off at once on foot to walk the 3 miles into Dresden, and when he arrived, very tired and very frightened, he could scarcely understand why his mother was crying and why his father should look so strangely ill. They bade him play his little piece of music on the piano in the next room to see if it would interest the dying man. And as he stumbled over the notes, his stepfather listened and said, "Is it possible he may have musical talent?" He had always been so anxious to discover some special talent in the boy. Early next morning, the children were told that their kind stepfather was dead and had sent each one a message and his blessing. "He hoped to make something of you," said the weeping mother to Richard. and it seemed as if now that hope was dead, too. Soon after that, the good schoolmaster arrived and took Richard back to the old parsonage, but he did not stay there long. His stepfather's brother undertook to look after the widow and children, and he arranged that Richard should live with him at Eisleben, where he carried on his business as a goldsmith. Richard was accustomed to changes by this time, and it felt almost like a new fairy tale to live in the old house in the marketplace of Eisleben, the little town so full of memories of Martin Luther. Not that Richard cared much about Luther. His fairy time was made up of all the strange sights and sounds of the busy marketplace and the wonderful music of the band of the hussars, which were quartered near at hand. There was no saying what strange and delightful sights might meet the eye when one looked out onto that marketplace. Sometimes there was even a circus or a troop of acrobats, and once there was a tightrope stretched from tower to tower across the square, on which a man walked as easily as if he was on solid earth. Richard felt certain then that to walk on a tightrope was the most splendid achievement in all the world, and he set himself earnestly to learn how to do it. He made a rope of twisted cords and stretched it across the courtyard, and in a very short time, in spite of many falls and bruises, he succeeded in walking across with the help of a balancing pole. But he grew tired of being an acrobat ere long, and turned once more to the joy of that wonderful music which was more magic than anything else. One special piece he never tired of hearing, the Huntsman's Chorus, out of the Freischutz. Why, he must have often seen in Dresden the great composer Weber, who had made this magic music. It was something to dream about. But besides the strange sights and haunting music of the outside world, life was very interesting inside as well. In a little dark room overlooking a narrow courtyard, the old step-grandmother lived, and Richard used to love to creep quietly into the room and watch her as she sat among her birds. In and out of the window the robins fluttered, hopping fearlessly upon her chair and fluttering about the green boughs, which she always kept fresh for them, by the side of the china stove. Sometimes, alas, a cat would find its way in and carry off one of the friendly robins. But Richard always managed to catch others for the old woman to tame, and she was so pleased with him that she adopted him as well as the birds and kept him tidy and clean. School did not fit in very well with the rest of the fairy tale life, and Richard had many a tussle with the town boys who mocked at his square cap. But out of school hours, there were always adventures to be sought, for in the country round about and along the river bank, which was like an enchanted world to him. Then suddenly the fairy tale came to a cruel end. Eisleben, the acrobats, the brass band, the old grandmother and her birds all faded away, and Richard's life was changed once more, and he was sent off to Leipzig to visit his father's relations, the Wagners. He was only 8 years old, but he had seen so many changes that he was quite ready for anything that might happen next. And here was change indeed. His uncle Adolf and Aunt Friederike Wagner lived in a very large and stately mansion, quite unlike the old house in the marketplace of Eisleben. And it was a house that had belonged to the electoral family of Saxony since the days of Augustus the Strong, and in one of his splendid apartments a bed was prepared for the small guest in a royal fashion. It was delightful to live in a room hung with silken curtains and filled with beautiful furniture, but it possessed one great drawback for Richard. He could not bear to look at the rows of portraits that hung upon the walls. The painted faces were exactly like a row of ghosts watching him, and when he was left alone with them, they seemed to come to life and step down from their frames and crowd around him. He tried to shut his eyes, but they terrified him almost out of his wits, although they were not terrifying portraits at all, but gentle ladies in hooped petticoats with charming faces and powdered hair. Nevertheless, when he crept into the great state bed and his aunt carried away the candle, he lay shaking with terror until sleep came, and mercifully chased the ghosts away. In spite of those haunting pictures, Rickard was sorry when his visit to Leipzig came to an end, and another change brought him back to his family home at Dresden. All his brothers and sisters had been getting on well in the world, and Rosalie, his eldest sister, had such a good engagement at the Dresden Theater that she was able to support the whole family and keep things comfortable. Another sister was an actress as well, and one of the brothers had also gone on the stage, but their mother wished they had found something different to do. She had no liking for the theater, and she was firmly determined that her youngest boy should have nothing to do with it. She was keenly anxious that Rickard should turn out well, and now that she had him at home again, she watched anxiously to see in what direction his talents lay. It was rather difficult to decide what was to be made of the boy, but as he was only just 8 years old, it was clearly necessary to send him to school, where it was to be hoped he would show some signs of cleverness. So to the Kreuz Grammar School at Dresden, Rickard went. But, alas for his mother's hopes, he was immediately placed in the lowest class and began his school career there as a dunce. Before long, however, it was discovered that Rickard could be quick and clever enough when his interest was aroused. Anything he wanted to learn, he learned quickly. He was only dull and inattentive when he was set to learn things he disliked, such as arithmetic and grammar. Anything strange or mysterious, anything with a story about it, immediately interested him. And because he loved the Greek myths, he set to work to learn Greek, that he might the better imagine how his beloved heroes spoke to each other. Grammar was always a tiresome obstacle, and he wished with all his heart that he could learn a language without it, but even grammar could be mastered if he made up his mind to do it. So time went on, and still his mother watched for some sign of special talent, and at last she thought her hopes were to be realized. The headmaster of the grammar school had ordered the boys to write a poem in memory of the sad death of one of their companions, and had promised that if any of the verses should be considered good enough, he would have them published. Rickard immediately set to work and wrote his set of verses, which he showed to one of the masters, and after the poem was cleared of extravagances, it was sent in. The verses were declared to be the best that had been written. The headmaster decided that they were worthy of being printed, and Rickard suddenly found himself famous. "He is destined to be a poet," declared his mother, as she folded her hands in thankfulness. But she rejoiced too soon. Rickard soon tired of making verses and won no more laurels. He was a rather idle but very happy schoolboy, fond of fun and mischief, and eager for any kind of adventure. What was the use of trying to be a poet? The old pictures at Leipzig were not the only things that filled Rickard's fancy with ghostly terrors. All his life, he had been haunted by uncanny fancies wherever he went. Whenever he was left alone in a room and he began to fix his attention on any particular piece of furniture, it always seemed to become alive and to twist itself into horrible shapes on purpose to frighten him. Scarcely a night passed that he did not wake up screaming over some dreadful dream, and though he was whipped and punished for disturbing the household, neither whipping nor punishment seemed to have any effect in curing him. Indeed, he was so thankful to hear a human voice that he welcomed punishment gladly. None of his brothers or sisters would sleep near him, and the more he was left alone, the louder he screamed. Music had always been associated with Rickard's ghosts, and the sound of a violin had from his babyhood filled him half with terror and half with a curious kind of delight. He had never forgotten the huntsman's chorus, which he had heard the band play in the marketplace of Eisleben, and now he began to long to be able to play it for himself. Weber, the composer of the Freischütz, patted the boy kindly on the head one day and asked if he wanted to become a musician, but Ricard's mother answered for him. "He has never shown any signs of musical talent," she said sadly, which was quite true. Ricard loved to hear music, but had never taken the trouble to make it for himself. Now, however, he was fired with a desire to play the overture to Freischutz, which charmed him by its mysterious feeling of ghostliness. Without any help at all, he set to work to pick out the notes on the piano, and before long managed to play the piece in his own peculiar way. Seeing this, his mother, when he was 12 years old, engaged a master to give him regular music lessons, and he soon learned to play whatever piece of music he particularly fancied. Now, too, he began to be interested in learning all he could about music and the great composers. "Who was Beethoven?" he asked his sisters, and the story of the great master, deaf to his own wonderful music, thrilled the boy with keenest sympathy. At night, instead of ghosts, he dreamed of the great composers, met them and talked to them, and often woke up sobbing with excitement. At last he knew what he wanted to do. He would compose music. Of course, he had once made up his mind to be a tightrope walker, but that was when he was 7. His mother had arranged that he should be a poet, but then he had only been 9 years old. Now that he was 13, he knew his own mind, and he meant to set himself seriously to work to be a great composer. "I hope to make something of the boy," his stepfather had said sorrowfully when he lay dying. But Rickard had needed no making. The genius was there, ready to unfold itself, all in good time, and to thrill the world with wild, sweet music, music full of the strange fancies and ghostly terrors which haunted little Rickard in his childhood's days.